Hey, all right, a couple notes before I get started here. One, I'm at home. My kids were playing in the other room. So if you guys hear them, I'm not going to go tell them to shut up. I went in to see what they were doing, and they said they're playing a game. And I said, well, what kind of game? Well, I don't know. It's just a game. And I look, and they've got dinosaurs and action figures and stuffed animals all around the room, and they're holding things up, and I'm hearing jet engine noises when I shut the door. So whatever they're doing, they're having fun, and I don't want to interrupt it. It looked kind of cool. The other note is that I'm working without a script here today. Not that I don't have a script. I mean, they're all right there. I could certainly open the files up. But I've got all the stuff written down in my handy-dandy pocket mod here. And so I thought, you know what? Let's try it without the script. I'm going to work straight out of the pocket mod and just see what happens. I mean, until, of course, we get to Podomatic. I got to have the Podomatic list. But you guys get what I mean. So I am going to flounder a little bit, and I think it's going to be fun. But let's get on with it.
Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 81 of Nerd Pride Radio. 81, that's like 3 to the 4th power, or 9 squared, or 3 squared squared, so it's pretty cool in that case. But more than that, 81, the year 1981 was the year that I bought my first Dungeons & Dragons basic boxed set. I'm pretty sure the first time I played was in 1980, but I'm really fuzzy on that one. It was at, I think, a holiday party, so probably like a New Year's Eve party, and my parents went off and left us with some babysitter who was willing to play Dungeons & Dragons with a fifth grader, and I assume my brother was in second grade at the time. So anyway, I think I may have played for the first time in 80, that one session, but then my birthday, 1981, fifth grade, is when I got my first set. So 81 is pretty sweet. But on with the show. My name is Mike Jones. Oh, wait, no. First you have to ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I'm awesome. It's a really good day. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a science fiction nerd, comic book nerd, computer nerd, commie nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like two other kinds of nerd I completely forgot because I don't have my script, and like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go to every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As usual, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. Strangely, Nerd Pride Radio smells exactly like melted crayons. Weird. But we're going to get right into the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. Oh, man. I don't even know what that means. I'm completely blanking on my meticulously plotted portion of the podcast script. But during the course of my busy, busy week, if something strikes me as interesting, oh, no, that's it. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I write it down right here in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and also usually then transfer it over to a script, which clearly I'm not doing. But fortunately, the best stuff off of this list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs! Yeah, maybe the scriptless thing was a bad idea. What's the first thing in my pocket mod here?
Oppenheimer!
That's right, we're going to do a little meta talk. Pull back the curtain, just talk about the podcast, the website, stuff going on behind the scenes. I hope, well, you guys might have noticed that I'm starting to release these Sunday night as close to midnight as possible, a little earlier, a little later, but I'm trying to get a regular release schedule so you guys kind of know when to expect the podcast to show up. And then that way, if, like last week, I am unable to record for whatever reason, then you also know you can come and check the blog, check the website for an announcement. And sadly, I couldn't record last week, but I'm trying to get it down to making sure I record every week and making sure that it's coming out at the same time every week. But that also leads me to getting on a regular schedule is step one. Step two, I want to go back to promoting the podcast a little bit. For the first 2 or 3 years on a semi-regular basis, I would post up my links to the episode on various gaming websites and gaming news sites around the internet. And I just kind of trailed off with doing that. You know, sometimes I post it on Facebook, sometimes I make a Twitter announcement, but nah, I keep forgetting it. It never seemed like it was worth that much effort. And then I went back and I checked my numbers. And here's the thing. I have some episodes in the past that have huge download numbers, which does not, the huge download numbers don't translate to regular subscribers necessarily. But they had really big numbers for certain episodes. And I thought maybe it had to do with the title of it, because I did a little experiment with, you know, trying out, clickbait sort of titles just to see what would happen. And yeah, that does bump up the numbers a little bit, but it's not as significant as you might think. No, it turns out, I never knew what exactly caused that bump. As I'm going back through all the different sites that I used to pimp myself out on, I would go back and I was looking for the old threads to see where I left off and what, you know, what format I was using and, you know, do I still have an active account on that website? And it turns out that I'm finding, like, Barbarians at the Golden Arches was one of my earlier episodes that has always had big download numbers, and I don't know why. Well, I got to one of these sites that I pimp on, and I can't remember which one it was, some gaming forum. And as I'm looking in, I realize, oh, Barbarians at the Golden Arches is the very last episode that I pimped on their site. It's the last one that has a link to it. And so, holy crap, that makes a difference. And I found correlations that another one, The Sisters Trung is another one that gets fairly decent download numbers. It was the last one that I bothered to post up on the Fear the Boot forums, for example. So I'm double checking. Sure enough, I can find this correlation that all the ones that get bigger numbers are the ones that I had pimping links to, which makes sense. It makes sense, but it never clicked with me. And so now I'm looking at it, and sure enough, I have all of my old episodes, some of the earliest episodes have download numbers in the thousands because they've been out there for, you know, 4 years or so. And then, you know, later it gets into, you know, I've got ones in the hundreds, the whatever. But then the last, this last season, since I kicked it off here again, it's dropped off. And so all I have is generally every week I have my, you know, 80 of you that download right away within the first week or two that you guys wind up downloading it, which is awesome. So about 80, and I figure that's what my regular listenership is 60 to 80, something like that, just for now. And as I look back, I plot it all out on a graph, and sure enough, that graph nosedives right at the moment I stopped pimping. So, again, and I don't think that those huge download numbers necessarily mean a whole lot, because I don't care so much about total number of downloads. I care about the regular listeners. I care about the people who are actually downloading it right away, the people who know me and come back every week and are excited to hear this. But getting the pimping out there, getting the advertising out there so that more people do download it will translate into new listeners eventually. I mean, if 200 people wind up downloading it, out of those 200 people, because, you know, they saw a link on XKCD or they saw a link on some other gaming site, not that XKCD is a gaming site, but they do have an open pimping forum, so I use it. But if I get 200 downloads out of that kind of stuff and one or two of them turn into regular listeners, I've won. And it doesn't take me that much time. It's like 10 minutes to go around and put all these posts up. So I'm going to try and start doing that again. And so this is where I'm bringing it to you guys. I have a thread on the forums, but, you know, you can email me, tweet at me, whatever. But let me know if you've got a good website that allows free advertising like that, that doesn't mind people coming in and pimping their stuff, then I would love to hear about it if you think it's an appropriate audience for what I do. I mean, again, mostly it's been gaming sites up till now, but, you know, it's also just general nerdetry. So So if you've got a place that seems to be into that, let me know, because I would love to try and spread the word to other places. And again, it's got to be someplace that has a spot specifically for, forum member advertising or whatever they're going to call it. But a place that you're allowed to just tout your own stuff and they don't mind you just doing blatant advertising, because I don't want to, I am not going to go troll on forums that don't welcome that. So, but anyway, if you've got those, let me know, because I'm going to start doing that and probably doing it with this very episode, which, wow, maybe that's suddenly, does that seem like a bad idea that on the first episode I'm going to start pimping out, I start announcing to everybody what my numbers are and what my plan is for suckering more people in? It's a little shameless, but yeah, you know what? We're going to do it anyway. So, if you guys want to help me out, I would really, really appreciate it. Like I say, I've got maybe 6 sites right now that I use, plus Facebook, plus Twitter. If you've got any other ideas, please let me know. I am all ears. So, what is next in my handy dandy pocket mod? That was my meta talk. So that next brings me to, updates! Update on the business cards that I got from the lovely Darks and Mrs. Darks. They shipped me the business cards. I'm thrilled to death. It says right on it, Mike Jones, nerd. It's official. And I've been handing out so many of those. It's so nice, because you guys know how much I love to talk about me, right? So I didn't realize how often I wind up bringing up, I was just talking about that on my podcast, or, I heard it. And someone will go, you do a podcast? Oh, you have a website? And I then get to pull out my wallet and go, yeah, here, hold on. I even have business cards. And here's the best part is, normally, look, I'm a nerd with a nerd website and a nerd podcast, and it would seem really, really pretentious to just have my own business cards that I hand out for that reason. But I have the advantage of, no, these were a gift. And so then I get to do the whole humble brag of, actually, these were a gift from some friends, listeners who have heard me mention it, and they sent them to me. They just showed up on my doorstep. So therefore, I get to hand out the business cards while not looking like the kind of guy who's going to make business cards for himself. Oh, it's the best of all possible worlds. It's so nice. I love having business cards. Thank you. I appreciate it. I was just about to say, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, but I'm telling you how much I appreciate it. So there, that's updates. Updates. Oh man, I have been really bad on the updates lately. Maybe I have to change that. Maybe my voice isn't going to hit that as I get older. Ugh. I mean, God, I gave up smoking 10 years ago. My voice should be better, right? Oh, so, let's see what's next. Oh, next is my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. That's right. Role-playing games, video games, card games, mostly role-playing games. If it fits on my gaming table, I am here to share it with you guys. On my gaming table this week, I got 2 topics. One, I want to talk about kids and role-playing games, which I've talked about many times before. And specifically, I want to talk about what kids can handle in role-playing games, like what's age-appropriate, how maturity levels. But I'm going to have to save that for another recording, because my kids are right here. And in talking about this topic, I have specific examples that involve the cliffhanger event they're at right now in their game, and I don't want to give anything away. So I'm going to put that one off. But the other one is a friend of mine from the boards, Rika, who is in the current Rune Lords Pathfinder game that we're playing, which I have talked about many, many times. Rika was planning on starting up her own new game, and our other friend Jeff has just started up his own game. It's all Pathfinder, and it is all being played on Roll20. If you guys have not been to Roll20.net, awesome, awesome online tabletop. Really good community, really good system. We really enjoy using it. And I don't have the ability to join a second campaign right now. We play twice a month for our Rune Lords campaign, and that is about my limit. We did, for a little while, we did Stan's game, where we were alternating. So we one Thursday we would play in our Rune Lords campaign, then the next Thursday we'd play in Stan's campaign, Cost of Magic, which was also awesome. And that was fine because Stan's was meant to be a one shot. We played like 8 sessions and, you know, worked out perfectly. We had a great time. And then it was done. But during that time of going every single Thursday, I realized really quickly that I couldn't do that long term. I can't play every single week as much as I would love to, as much as I would love to play 2 or 3 nights a week because I'm just that kind of guy. I just don't have the ability. I would have to cancel too many times. And so very sadly with both Jeff's campaign and Rika's campaign, I had to very politely bow out, as much as I love both of them and would love to be in one of their games because, they've got good minds for gaming and I just think it would be a blast. I wasn't able to do it. So what Jeff did was Jeff offered me a guest spot. I talked about it last time, where I came on as my current Rune Lords character, Dothan, came on as my regular character, but a couple years older, and I was just there as the role of a non-player character to come in, do a little performing, and, you know, a little bit of role play, and, oh, I impart some really cool information that they're going to need later, and then I get to bow out. I'm in for one session, great time, and then I leave. A little guest spot. And I loved it. I loved it, and I mean, it was nerve-wracking. It was really nerve-wracking, more than regular role-playing. But what just came up, as Rika was talking about her campaign, which has fallen through for the moment, but what came up was the idea of, if you want to do a guest spot, I said, well, you know what, I'll even take the role of a minor hireling. You know, some contractor or low-level NPC who's going to stick with the group for just 2 or 3 sessions and then be gone. And I thought, how cool would that be? A game that maybe you won't think this is cool, but I do. Oh, I'm so excited about this idea. Imagine the game has been going on for a while. You know, you've got characters that are 4th, 5th, 8th level, whatever they're going to be, and they're powerful adventurers, and they've been doing this for a while. And now I get to come on as the hireling. I get to come on as the NPC who sticks with their group and is like 2 or 3 levels lower. So I'm not effective in combat. I'm not ever going to be the primary healer or primary spellcaster. They've got somebody that does all that stuff better than me. But I'm like, I'm the guide through the wilderness, okay? I'm the expert who's here to do some sort of building thing or analysis thing or whatever. They need me. Or maybe even I'm just the guy that they need to transport cross-country. Oh, I would love to be that guy too. But here's the thing about playing that role is they've got months of history as a group. All right, they're already a group. And now here I am. I'm not high enough level to make a huge difference to any of the actual action. So I'm really just there to role play. And I also am not important enough for them to explain anything to. That's the best part. Is that I get to come in cold. I know none of the background, and they're not going to bother to tell me. I get to be the idea of being an NPC who is flying completely blind, that, okay, they're telling me I need to be over here doing this stuff. Why am I risking my life? What am I? Just shut up and do it. We're paying you. Okay, I'm on it, I guess. I would love to be that guy. That sounds like so much fun. I can't. Jeff said he may have some spots like that coming up. I hope so. Fingers crossed. This just sounds like the most exciting role-playing opportunity for me because it is a completely different viewpoint on the game. It is coming in, again, totally blind from a totally different angle and role-playing as, I mean, essentially part of the scenery. And also because I'm not the starring guy, I've also mostly got to keep my mouth shut through most of the game. I'm not here to steal the spotlight from anybody. I'm not here to be the guy who saves the day. I'm not, you know, when you have a regular group, everyone's got to take their turn in the spotlight. Everyone gets their moment to shine. Everyone, you know, when, you know, we've got decisions to make, everyone's got to put their heads together and have big discussions on how we're going to move forward and whatever. I don't get to do any of that because, well, that's not my role. I'm not supposed to be the hero. I'm not supposed to, if they need advice, I can maybe pipe up and go, well, I wouldn't go through that door if I were you. Well, why not? And then that's it. You know, once I give my little bit, I back out again, and now they've got my information. They do whatever they're going to do with it. I'm so excited about this opportunity. I can't wait. I hope The only problem is scheduling. It's always about scheduling. I mean, Thursday nights are all right. Thursday nights are the one night of the week that I feel like I can set aside, and it's usually not too bad unless Aiden's got a test to study for the next day or something like that. And then, yeah, no, he needs help, you know. So I'm not saying he need. Don't take it that I'm saying Aiden's some sort of idiot. He's not. Aiden is actually quite brilliant, as are all my children, by the way. But it does mean that, you know, if he's got a big physics test the next day, he does not have the attention span or study skills to sit down all by himself and learn that material. I mean, he'll sit down with it and go, yeah, I know this. I'm good. It takes someone to sit with him and do the whole question and response. He needs some feedback. And so I don't know how he's going to survive at college, but you know what? That'll be his problem in a year, right? Right. I don't have to worry about that, do I? Yeah. No, not at all. So, anyway, I think that's it for my gaming table. But I'm telling you, if anyone has done anything like that before, I'm sure there's got to be plenty of you out there who have done a guest spot in a game where you just played, you know, in some long-term campaign, you've come in and you've just played this role for just, you know, a few sessions or just one session, and then you're done. I would love to hear how your experiences went, because I would love to try, and especially, again, to try it as a low-level nobody, just a piece of furniture. I would love to be that guy. So I'm excited. So anyway, next up on the list, where are we now? Oh, can you hear that music?
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
That's right, we've just stepped into the science corner, and that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. We went to the planetarium a week ago, and it was spectacular. You know me, I love planets, planetoids, dwarf planets. I love space. I love astronomy. I had such a great time at the planetarium, and I've been to a few planetariums in my life, and this was really the planetarium. I kept doing that all day. Every time when we saw the big sign, we're driving up, I'm like, look, kids, it's the planetarium. And what are you doing? It's the planetarium. It's an old South Park. Oh, you guys don't want, oh, that's right, you can't. Okay, so I was the only person who got that joke. Didn't matter. Made me laugh all day. And once we were in, this one was not a huge planetarium. It's just part of the local state college. And yet, they had a great show. They had a really good show. The guy running it was one of the professors there and really, really knowledgeable and just a fun guy to talk to. He took the questions from the kids and he gave great explanations of stuff. And the films that they ran were ones I'd never seen before and got this beautiful look at space. And I don't know that I necessarily learned anything new, but it's one of those things where you get to see new perspective and you get to see new comparisons, and you got to watch all these kids experiencing something new. Because for most of them, this was all brand new information, stuff that was amazing and shocking. I mean, look, to me, I'm still floored by the idea that most people that I run into, I would say the majority of people in this country, don't know the difference between the solar system, the galaxy, or a solar system, a galaxy, and the whole universe. They don't understand the scale of it. They don't understand that there's a real difference between saying solar system, galaxy, universe. The at least two of those words, and usually all three, tend to blur together for most people. It shocks me every time. Motorcycle. At least I hope it was a motorcycle. Anyway, doesn't matter. And so watching these kids get a little bit of an education, and you know, most of them probably aren't going to retain a whole lot of this, and it's going to blur together as they get older, just like all the other information they're learning in school. But it was just nice to see. It was a good learning experience for them. I had a great time at it. And it's spurred some questions from my own kids. Wait. Before we get to their questions, though, the one thing I was the most interesting fact to me of this entire planetarium experience as we're watching this film. And it does, it shows all the planets of our solar system and lots of the features of it, and it puts them all together and shows scale and size and all this. And then it backs out and it shows our whole galaxy. And as it's showing us the Milky Way galaxy, it did a highlight of, here's all the stars in our galaxy that you can see with your naked eye. It was tiny. I never knew that before. I mean, I realized that we can't see our whole galaxy. I realized that, you know, the disk of the galaxy itself blocks a lot of the further stuff and the blah, blah, blah. But the idea that you're looking at this dinner plate sized galaxy, and the visible portion of that galaxy is literally like a pea-sized spot on one side of it. I was just floored. I didn't realize how, before telescopes, how limited our viewing of our galaxy was. It's tiny, teeny, teeny, tiny in, you know, the galactic scale. But anyway, it led to some questions from my own kids. First off, Dad, does the universe go on forever? To which the answer is, I don't think it does. I mean, this is a tough one, but I think it doesn't necessarily have edges to it, and there's certainly, you know, no outside. It's not like you can go outside of our universe. But I think, because there's two concepts working for me here, is one is, okay, we started at the Big Bang, and we had expansion from there, and we had rapid expansion that the expansion has been slowing, but still constantly expanding for the last, you know, 13.5 billion years or however long it is. And so therefore, that implies that, yeah, there may not necessarily be a center to the universe, there may not necessarily be a defined edge to the universe, but it does imply that, well, yeah, we've only got as much universe as space has expanded. So therefore, there has to be a limit to the grand total size of it. And I've seen estimates of the weight of the entire universe. I've seen those estimates. So scientists are working from the premise that the universe is limited in size. I mean, still vastly huge, infinite for most intents and purposes, but there's a limit to it somewhere. But here's the other thing, and this was the hard part to explain to my kids, is that there is a there's a limit to our known universe. And the known universe, and in fact, not just known, but knowable, the knowable universe is smaller, probably much smaller than the entire universe itself. And I'm trying to explain to him, and it was just a tough concept that that the universe is expanding. It's expanding all over the universe. The entire universe, space is expanding constantly. All right, so points that are close together, all the space in between them is expanding. So they're expanding at a certain rate, and you get points that are twice as far away as that. Well, they're expanding, moving away from each other twice as fast. The further away something is, the faster space, the space in between us is expanding, the faster it's moving away from us just by the expansion of space. Not that it's necessarily itself moving away from us or relative to us, although it probably is, could be. But the fact that space itself is getting so much bigger. And again, you can never go faster than the speed of light. All right? The speed of light is always constant through space, but as I've mentioned before, the space itself can expand faster than light speed. This is the whole concept of how the warp drive might work, is that, yeah, well, we can't necessarily move ourselves faster than light, but we could expand and contract space at greater than light speeds, so it would seem to us that we're moving faster than light, or it would seem to an outside observer, and yet we're actually not. All right, so what this means is, there are points of the universe in all directions that are moving away from us faster than the speed of light. If something is moving away from us faster than the speed of light, because space is expanding that rapidly, that means that light, information, energy, anything from that can never, ever reach us. It will never travel fast enough to ever get to us. And therefore, it is effectively unknowable. It is effectively outside of our possible range of experiences. And so therefore, in that sense, the knowable universe, the things that we could possibly ever see, no matter how much time we are given, the possible things that we could ever see, ever experience, is certainly finite. Absolutely, definitely finite. And at the rate things are expanding, it might be getting smaller every moment. But I don't know for sure. I don't know how the math works on that. It would seem to me, basic logic would seem to me, that our knowable universe is shrinking. The amount of space in it is getting larger, but the amount of matter in it may be getting smaller over time. But I don't know if that's true or not. Just that's what logic tells me, but I've also found that logic doesn't have a lot of bearing on subject matters like this. So I don't know. If some expert wants to come correct me, refine what I've said, or completely turn it around and give the correct answer, I'd be more than happy to listen because it fascinates me. I would love to hear it. The other question that went along with it, and this is a tough one for me, is, Dad, some of my friends think that if there were really aliens out there, that they'd want to kill us. I told them they were stupid, but I couldn't explain why. Okay, well, that is a good point. And, well, here's the thing. If there were aliens out there, and if they were intelligent aliens, and if we actually made contact with them, would they want to attack us? And this hits a theme I've come back to before, is, well, if we ran into an alien species, would we want to kill them? Let's assume that they're comparable to us in some way. If we met them, and if we recognized that they were intelligent, just as they recognize that we are intelligent, let's assume we've got that level of equality, would we want to kill them? And no, absolutely not. Of course we wouldn't. God, this would be one of the, probably the greatest scientific discovery ever. We would be thrilled to death. We would be so excited. And we would set up all sorts of rules and laws to make sure that, that we were treating them respectfully and that we didn't do anything to offend them or tread on their rights or harm them in any way. We would be very careful about that. But there's the problem is that, yeah, we'd have to pass laws to say that. And the simple fact that we have to pass a law means that there are some people out there who want to violate that. And here's where the problem comes in. And I'm still convinced that this is true, is that if we met aliens, we would be thrilled to death to meet them, and we would set it up as our goal as the human race. It would be our priority to be peaceful and make peaceful contact with these people and share with them intellectually and materially and however we need to, and that we would want to be that peaceful galactic society. That's what we would strive for. And yet, unless human nature drastically changes over the course of the next 100 years or 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years that takes us to find these people or beings, maybe they'd be offended by being called people. I don't know. I haven't met them yet. There would still be people who would want to take advantage of that situation. Just like, and this is where I talked about elephants disappearing before. Just like, look, elephants are a precious commodity, like any endangered species, a precious commodity. And we have recognized as a people, as a society, every government and culture has recognized that, look, we need to protect certain creatures because we don't want to lose them from this earth. All right. As a world body, we've recognized that we need to protect the elephants as one example among many protected species. And yet the simple fact that we have to pass a law to say that recognizes the fact that there are lots of people out there who don't give a crap about that law because there's either, you know, they've got a family to feed and they're desperate and this is a good way to do it. Or they are just greedy and selfish and they recognize that this is a great way to make money. Is to trade in elephant parts and ivory and whatever. And so therefore, we'd meet up with these aliens, we'd have this wonderful, peaceable exchange for a long time until there were other people who would sneak around whatever rules or laws we have and would start taking advantage of them, trying to exploit their resources or exploit their people or try to do horrible things to them because there's money to be made. You know, maybe rationalizing it as, well, this is harmless, or maybe not even bothering to rationalize it because, well, they don't care because they've got a family to feed or they have money that they could be making, power they could be establishing and consolidating. And sadly, I think the aliens on the other side of that, again, assuming that they are even remotely similar to human beings, would be doing the same thing to us. That if they were in a position to take advantage of us in some way, then there would be some element of their society that would try to do that. And because of our inherent xenophobic predispositions, I think it would be really tough for us and for the aliens to recognize that, again, yeah, we know there's some bad people doing some bad things, but in general, 99% of them are good, and we really need to not throw that away. I think it would be way too easy to wind up going to war and wind up eventually wanting to kill each other. So in that sense, yeah, maybe your friends are right, but I don't think it would be immediate, and I don't think it would be all their fault. You know what I mean? That if it was going to turn to fisticuffs for whatever reason, I'm pretty sure we'd have a big hand in that too. You know, if not the entire hand, both hands. That's what I mean. So, a complicated situation, but one that, again, is something that, unless human nature changes, I think it's something that we're going to have to potentially face down the road here. The idea that we have this amazing resource, this amazing ability to make peace, and to learn and grow as a race, to expand our horizons, our knowledge, our technology, and yet we could possibly wind up ruining the whole thing because, well, a few bad apples, you know what I mean? And again, it, probably a few bad apples on both sides, because that's just how it works. And again, that's all drawing a lot of assumptions about what other intelligent species would be like. But I'm, you know, if we're going to assume that they're a recognizable intelligence that is anything like ourselves, then they're probably going to have their good and their bad just like anyone. So, you know, God, now I've depressed myself. That was too much. You know what? Let's move on to happier topics. What else is on my list? MetaTalk, updates, gaming table, science corner. Wow, I think I am completely out of stuff for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. You know what that means? That's right. It's time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot diggity dog diggity. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do those topics come from, you ask? I know you're asking. You've asked. Well, that is where you come in. You want me to haver on about something? Send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums, and I will put it on my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. I don't need a script for that one. Hot dog. And the first number is 96. All right, 96 is from Daz. Hey, Daz. Daz says, how long can you stay underwater? When I was in high school, 2.5 minutes. Now, 1.5 minutes, probably. It's my guess. I mean, obviously, look, if someone's holding me under and my life depends on it, I bet I could go a good 3 minutes or more before finally losing consciousness. But you know, back when I was young and we had a swimming pool, that was something that I practiced at and got pretty good at. So, yeah, 2.5 minutes then. But, yeah, now, certainly less than 2. I'm old and feeble. 06. It's going to take a while. That's the far end of the chart. Hey, it's from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, you talk a lot about your love of numbers and finding bases, etc. Do you also have synesthesia? Synesthesia. I pronounced it correctly. If so, how does yours manifest? Okay. If I understand synesthesia correctly, synesthesia is a confluence of senses, an overlapping of senses, the idea of experiencing one sensory input in terms of another. For example, seeing, you know, anytime you see the number four feels purple, all right? Or when you see certain things, it reminds you of a taste or smell, or that they're intimately linked, that you, it's, I'm not explaining it really well, but it, yeah, the idea that you experience something and it, you know, you experience certain sounds as a smell. Not just that it reminds you of something, but you're actually experiencing it as a certain smell or as a certain sound or as a certain color, feeling, whatever. Hold on. Okay, yeah, see? Wikipedia verifies that, yeah, I'm on the right track. That's pretty close. And no, I do not have synesthesia. That sounds, amazingly interesting. I can't imagine whether it is really cool to have it or whether it would be disturbing or I don't know for sure, but it is really, really interesting. And, I don't, but I am interested in stuff like that because, I'm going to take this off topic because I don't have any experience with synesthesia, but I'll relate it to something I do know. For example, I have a friend who is hearing impaired, deaf, and I asked him, and an online friend, I've never actually met him in person. I haven't been that fortunate. But I did ask him once because I was curious about his thought process, how he pictures things in his head. When he's talking, I'm like, you know, for me, when I talk, I hear the words in my head, or when I am thinking about something, sometimes I think, you know, with just certain sensory impressions or whatever, but most of my thought process is in words. I think as I would be speaking, generally. And so I asked him, so when you're thinking about something, are you thinking about the signs as you're thinking the words? How does that come across to you? And he says, usually yes. He says, usually yeah, he's thinking in terms of sign. But he said numbers are different for him. And this was interesting to me, especially because the dude's a rocket scientist. And he said when he thinks of numbers, he usually is thinking of page numbers. He says he usually, when he has to picture the number 15 or whatever, he's seeing the page number 15 at the bottom corner of a page. And I just thought that was fascinating. And he didn't have a good explanation for why that was. Just that's the way his brain works. Similarly, when I was in college, I worked with a gal who was from, oh, I think she was Samoan, maybe? I can't remember. But wherever she was from, her English was not her native language. I remember it was a Pacific Island nation. But anyway, wherever she was from, English was not her native language, but she was pretty fluent in English. And I asked her, I said, so when you're thinking, when you're dreaming, for example, do you think in your native language or do you think in English? And she said, really, it just depends on context. She said up until she'd been in the States for a couple of years, she mostly thought in whatever her native tongue was, but the better she got at English, she realized it was a lot less stressful, a lot easier to simply think in English while she's in the United States, because the words and concepts in English were more appropriate to the items that she was dealing with, that she knew that's how other people would refer to them. There's certain, you know, certain things in her life here that just didn't have an easy way to say them in her native language. And so she said, yeah, usually she just thinks in English. But, you know, if she's got to make a call home or most often when she's dreaming, she said, yeah, she'll revert to her native tongue for her thought processes, even when she's in those situations, when she's visiting home, when she's talking to people at home. And I just thought that was just fascinating. Very interesting. And I don't know if this is similar, but Gillian Anderson, Dana Scully from The X-Files, and now she's also on all sorts of other stuff, which I haven't seen. I've only ever seen her in The X-Files and maybe a movie somewhere way back. But apparently She was born in England, but I believe raised most of her life in Canada or the U.S., but she's gone back and now she lives in England again. Her kids are being raised in England. So yeah, she must be living in England most of the time. But anyway, her accent is very, very fluid. And I just heard on some podcast they were talking about, it was weird hearing her with the English accent but apparently that's her native accent. And they're like, no, I've seen her in interviews and she doesn't have an accent in interviews. And so I heard her actually talk about this directly where she said, and it was probably on the Nerdist podcast, it's probably with Chris Hardwick, but she said, yeah, actually, her thought processes and her speech, the accent just kind of depends on the situation she's in. It's the way she's talking about it. If what she's saying is accurate, it's as if, yeah, either accent can just be completely native to her. And it's not even like she's consciously putting on an accent. She's in this situation. The English accent comes out. She's doing interviews with American media outlets. She just immediately slips into her American accent because that's just appropriate for the context. It's not something that she necessarily does consciously, according to her, but just something that happens. I thought, that is fascinating. Wouldn't have thought of that at all. Anyway, I've trailed far enough afield. 86. 86 is from... Yeah, see, I gotta learn to talk through these. All right, 86 is from Ronster. Ron says, what are your top three non-role-playing games? For example, Munchkin, Grand Theft Auto 3, Ticket to Ride. Man, you are hitting right on them, dude. Seriously? Right now, Munchkin is probably my number one favorite game that is not a role-playing game. But Ticket to Ride is right up there. We've been doing a lot of Ticket to Ride lately. I am a huge fan of Flux, the card game. I think Flux is amazing fun, and it takes a little bit to get people into it sometimes, but yeah, I love that. Another one that I like, and I don't know if I put this in my top five or anything necessarily, but it's one that I come back to a lot, Past the Pigs. If you've never played Past the Pigs, it's so simple. Anyone can learn to play, and it's something that I especially like introducing kids to it because it gets them outside of their normal range of what they're used to and introduces them to something new that is simple to understand and fun for every single person I've ever had play it. Past the Pigs, if you've never played, you got two dice that are shaped like pigs. Or it's actually just two little miniature pigs. And you roll them like they're dice, and depending on how they land, you can score points. So they've got a left side and right side. So if they both land on the left side or both land on the right side, you get a point. Okay, cool. If one of them lands standing up, oh, you get 5 points for that. If one of them lands magically balanced forward on his nose, which happens every once in a long while, it's like 15 points, or I can't remember all the scoring. But there's rules for, if you get a double snouter or a double jowler or a double razorback or, whatever. They've got names for all of them. So you have to learn all the different terminology. You don't have to learn all the different terminology, but it's a lot more fun when you do. And so there's all these points, and you just keep rolling. You can roll and keep racking up points as long as you want on your turn until if they ever land with one has the left side up and one has the right side up, so they're mismatched, then, oh, that's it. You're out. Your turn's over. You lose all the points you've gained for this round. At any point, if you've built up enough points, you want to stop and bank those, you bank them. Your score is now set, and you can't lose those points again. But now you have to pass the pigs on to somebody else. And it just keeps going around. And the first one to get to 100 or whatever number you've set is the winner. And so it's a great game of risk-taking and assessing, where you need to be, what you're willing to risk, how far the other people are, that kind of stuff. So it takes a lot of calculation and a lot of thinking and decision making, but really you're just rolling a couple of pigs and counting up numbers. And it's simple and it's fun. I love Past the Pigs. But my top three, I'm going to say, Munchkin and Ticket to Ride for sure. But there's others. for video games, I wouldn't even put any video game in my top five now because I haven't played the video games for so stinking long. But I will certainly give credit to GTA 3 as being my favorite video game of all time. I love Grand Theft Auto 3. It's a great game. I don't know. I'm still a fan of Axis and Allies. I have very, very fond memories of Axis and Allies, but I would be afraid to play it now just because it's just, I don't know. It just seems so long and complicated, and you really need a group of people that all know what they're doing. That one's a tough one for me. And the Lost Worlds books. I will still break out the Lost Worlds books at the drop of a hat and play off a few of those. Love them. I'm hoping that coming up soon, Cards Against Humanity will be one of my favorite non-role-playing games, but I haven't played it yet. Although, look, it's already getting mainstream enough that Ellen is playing Cards Against Humanity on her show, which my wife and I watched the first couple of rounds that she played. She's got these huge oversized cards, and she's playing Cards Against Humanity on her talk show. And our first thought, we both said, wow, wonder how long they had to sort through to find combinations that wouldn't be too dirty for television. Because, yeah, I mean, there's Cards Against Humanity, obviously, has some really, really dirty stuff in there. But all of these are fairly clean or just walking that PG-13 line where, oh, it's suggestive, but it's not, you know, it's not flat out dirty. So it was interesting to watch. 49, apparently R2's done with that topic. 49 is from Zimny. Hey, Zim. Zimny says, what time do you normally go to bed on a working day? 11. I try to go to bed at 10, but you know what? The youngest one goes to bed at 8:45, and then the next one goes to bed at 9:15, and then the high schooler usually is up till 10 o'clock on a school night, and he'll try and push it and wrangle it, but you know, we have to be up early in the morning. If he doesn't get at least 6-7 hours of sleep, it's not going to work out for him. But he'll wind up being up till, you know, 10:15, 10:30, because it's always a dude, why aren't you in bed yet? And then it's, oh shoot, I forgot to take the dogs out yet. Oh shoot, I forgot to, okay, hold on. And he always has some reasons. But ultimately, once everyone else is in bed, then I need a little bit of time to unwind. So I'll watch an episode of something, or Lisa and I will go online and watch a couple videos together, or read some stuff together, or, you know, whatever. We'll just relax. And then ultimately, it's usually close to 11, sometimes 11:30. But it's about that. Weekends usually close to midnight, I would say. But, you know, there's a lot of variation in it. Sometimes, you know, if it's a gaming night, if it's a Thursday and we've got Rune Lords going on, usually one in the morning, that we game until 11:30 or midnight my time. And then after the game is over, I kind of take some time to absorb it, type some things up, decompress a little bit. And then by 1 o'clock, I'm falling asleep. But most nights, God, I would like to be in bed by 10. That, I think my life would function the smoothest if it was 10 o'clock every night. But you know what? Close enough for now. I'll have time to sleep when I'm dead, I suppose. 87 is... Hey, it's Elijah. This is my son. Oh, no, I can't do this one. I already answered this one. I knew it was in here somewhere. This is... Dad, would it make a difference if all the elephants were gone? Yeah, kid. It would. But I answered that last week. I told you I thought it was in here somewhere. I just couldn't find it. Well, there it was. 37 is from Lucy. All right. Lucy says, staff versus wand. Which is better? Which is more powerful? Why? It really, really depends. I prefer a staff just because it looks cooler than a wand. It's not as convenient, obviously. Look, the wand has the advantage of being a little more portable, a little more concealable. You know, you can walk around with, you know, 15 wands in your backpack or clipped to your belt or however it is you carry your wands around. You can have a lot of them. A staff, really difficult to get by with, you know, four staffs on you. But Staves. There you go. But I usually I associate wands with being a charged item. So a wand, most of the time, just duplicates some spell effect. And again, we're talking D&D and Pathfinder here, guys. A wand will duplicate a spell effect, and it will have a limited number of charges, usually starts with 50, and then it's gone. So a wand is just a free spell producer for you that, you know, you pay some money or you find it or whatever, and now you have free use of that spell until it runs out. Great. Whereas a staff, I usually associate with not being a charged item, and it is a little more flexible. It's a staff is more of a permanent item that has a more varied set of effects. But it also, again, is not as portable or disposable. And generally, I picture staffs as being more powerful for that reason, though. That wands normally, you don't see wands that rise to the level of an artifact. But more often, you will see staffs that have really amazing powers. Again, you know, even up to and including the level of being, you know, a major artifact of some sort. So certainly I think the staff is more powerful. I think the staff is better. I mean, wands have their advantages, and there's lots of good reasons for them. I mean, honestly, look, if you can get a wand of Cure Light Wounds, well, now you've got 50 Cure Light Wounds in a stick you carry on your belt, and you don't have to carry around 50 Cure Light Wound potions. Awesome. But again, it's still just a spell. It's still just a spell that that someone in the group can probably already cast. This is just a way to do it without having to use up a spell slot. So, staff to me. Staff. There you go. 38. That didn't go far. Ronster. Ron says, if you had to go back to school to train into another career field for whatever reason, what would you choose to become? Wow, what a challenging question for me. Something I actually have to think about and stall for time. I would probably go with a teacher of some sort, to be honest. I mean, look, that it's not a big glamorous field or anything, but as a high school teacher, I think I would love to be a high school science teacher or even a high school history teacher. I would enjoy those. I like kids. I like working with kids. I like sharing and imparting knowledge. And I understand that as a high school teacher, there's also a lot of frustration of working super hard to impart knowledge, but being under the constrictions of, yes, but you can really only impart knowledge within this certain framework we've provided you. And, oh yeah, 50% of the kids that you're going to be trying to impart to really just don't care. And of the rest of them, they only care as far as it's getting them the good grades that they need for whatever reason. I understand all that. And yet, I would really enjoy doing that, I think. It would be something really fun. That's a great question. I didn't think it was a great question at first, but then, you know, once I hit upon an answer, I like that. That's pretty good. 52. Let's see. God, can you guys hear that? Wow. I wonder what he's doing in there. Or what they're doing in there. Probably someone's being tortured and killed, is my guess. If you couldn't hear it, it sounded like an 8-year-old being tortured and killed. But now he's laughing. So, all right. You know what? As a good parent, I'm going to assume they're just fine, and I'll leave them to their own devices. How's that? 52 is from Ronster again. When do you start / finish your Christmas shopping? Christmas shopping is all year round. It's in general when we see something, oh, you know who that would be good for? Well, look, it's on sale. Let's buy it and put it in the attic. I mean, not like it's going to go bad. Okay, cool. But we don't buy a lot of things that way. Mostly it starts maybe a week after Thanksgiving is when we start looking at, okay, let's make a list. What stuff do we absolutely have to have this year? What do we got? Who do we have to shop for? Who do we have to? And then, I would assume from, I would say 2/3 of it probably is Amazon. That we just, we finally get all the stuff that we're looking for. And then we go out to Amazon and we just start piling things up, you know, comparing prices from different vendors, looking at stuff. And then we just get it all shipped to us, and most of our stuff is done right then. And then we have some tricky stuff that you can't just easily go to Amazon for, or you can't, you know, it's stuff that, yeah, you kind of got to go look, because I know kind of what they'd like, but I'm going to have to see it in person, or I'm going to have to, or like clothes. It's hard to buy clothes for certain people online, because the kids always need stuff, but you kind of have to see it in person to get a good feel for the sizes and the cut of it and that kind of thing. So there'll be a bunch of stuff that we'll run out to Target, or we'll make a special trip to Omaha or Sioux City so we can hit a bigger mall than we have and have a variety of stores to choose from. And we'll, you know, we'll spend one day shopping out of town, that we'll go wander around, see a bunch of cool stuff. You know, probably go to a big dinner, taking a movie, something like that, but we'll get some shopping done. And that's about it. And usually we're done with our Christmas shopping. I would say 98% of it will be done a week before Christmas, or by the weekend before Christmas at least. And then usually last minute there will be one item that we have to go out and grab. But it's always done by Christmas. But yeah, generally we start about the week after Thanksgiving, and within the next 3 weeks we get it all wrapped up and don't make a... try not to make a huge production out of it, but, you know, it's Christmas. There's always going to be stuff. There's always some drama, and there's always some things that well, we can't find that, but let's try it. Who knows? But, yeah, that's about my range. 83 is from Ronster again. Would you ever turn to the dark side? No. No, of course not. Unless it led me to great power, then maybe. 57 from Ronster. Ronster's got something to prove. Have you ever read or said something aloud that embarrassed you after you considered your words? Oh, I am absolutely sure I have. And I'm sure it's been many, many, many times. And I'm surprised that I can't think of any good examples off the top of my head. Because I'm the kind of person who, if I do something stupid, just something just blatantly stupid, and there are witnesses to it, say something blatantly stupid, and there are witnesses to it, that burns itself into my memory, and I will remember that minor screw-up forever. I have stuff from when I was in sixth grade that I said something dumb, and it's still... But to be embarrassed, after I considered what the words were, I also understand what you're saying there, the kind of thing that you say it, and then you realize that, oh, yeah, they could be taking it that way. I don't know. Those normally wouldn't embarrass me so much, because those would be just funny. Because I can't think of any of those that embarrass. I mean, look, 4 months ago at work, a gal walked up, and I couldn't remember her name. And I was pretty sure I had it. And so I called her by that name. And there was a whole crowd of people around that went, oh my God, did you just call her that? And then they all had a big laugh about it. And I realized, oh, that's right. And then right after everyone starts laughing, I'm like, oh, duh, of course I know her name. Duh, I've got it now. And nobody thought anything of it. It was a slip of the tongue as far as they knew. I mean, to me, I was like consciously working to try and get her name, and I thought I had it right. But to everybody else, it's like, oh, slip of the tongue. Yeah, they have offices right next door to each other. Of course, anybody could do that. It's not a big deal. They had a little laugh. And then they moved on. But to me, I still, every time I see her, I'm like, oh, God, I can't believe I did that. Not that she even remembers now. But to me, I will probably 10 years from now, I'll run into her somewhere and go, oh, God, that's right. I called her Shanna once. Oh, darn it. So that those things really stick with me for a long time. But I can't think of any that fit the example that you're thinking of. The idea that I say something and then only in retrospect go, oh, yeah, that was probably not the right way to do that. I'm sure they're out there. I'm sure there's tons of them out there. I just wish I could have a good example, because that would make for way better radio than what I'm doing now. 55. 55 is from Zimnipot. Hey, Zim. Zim says, is there a time limit on fortune cookies or other kinds of predictions? No. No. The only time limit really is the one that says specifically, by this date, something will happen. Or, this will happen in the next week. All right. If the prediction itself sets a time limit, then yes, there's a time limit. But if the prediction does not specify a time frame, you know, hey, good fortune is coming your way. Yeah, you know what? Might be 20 years from now, but it's coming my way. Now, good fortune is coming your way soon. Well, then that means you have to define what soon means. And to me, soon means for a fortune cookie within the next 6 months. But if it doesn't specify a time frame, no, predictions are good forever. I mean, as long as something is a complete fiction anyway, why would you limit that fiction to only by tomorrow? You know what I mean? 64. Good number. 64 is from Ron. Ron says, meanest thing you have ever done to anyone. The meanest thing I've ever done to anyone is ignoring Arpy when we were in junior high. I think it was going into ninth grade that this started. And I've told this story several times, but I'll tell it again just real quick. Arpy was my best friend, and Arpy was at least as big a nerd as I was, as if not bigger. And through Arpy, I was vaguely connected to a larger group of nerds, but he was my connection to that group. And going into eighth grade or ninth grade, I don't remember, I decided that it must have been going into high school. And I decided that I didn't want to be a nerd anymore, and I realized that Arpy was dragging me down, and so I just shut him out, just started ignoring him and moved on. And thus, not only did I cut off Arpy, but I cut off, those were, by the way, his initials, R-P, but he went by the initials R-P and then just spelled out the name, A-R-P-Y, R-P. And by cutting him off, I then cut off this connection to this group of role-playing gamers and other nerds that shared interests with me. So now I cut off that entire group of friends, and then, R-P, if you ever listen to this, you got to know that I never made any other friends, not until I moved away and started over in the new high school. I didn't make any other friends there. I wound up being really miserable, and I highly regret it. And since then, look, I've made every sort of effort to try and contact him. I have located him. I've sent emails to him. I have never gotten anywhere. I finally made contact with his wife and explained to her what was going on and explained that I really, really just wanted to apologize to him and let him know that I am a horrible dick of a human being. And I feel terrible for what I did and what I put him through. And I am so sorry. I just want to apologize. And she said, well, I'll let him know. And of course I've never heard from him, and I don't blame him. I'm a jerk. I was really, really bad. I was a crushingly bad and selfish friend. And that's the meanest thing I've ever done to anybody. Now, the second part of this question is, nicest thing you have ever done for anyone? I don't know. I do nice things all the time. I do minor nice things. I'm sure there's been major nice things along the way, but I don't know. There's lots of people who are nicer than me, and so I hate tooting my own horn on this one because, yeah, I'm nice to people. I'm polite. I'm nice. I've done helpful things. I've gone way out of my way to help somebody with something, but I feel like in my life I've gotten more back from others than I've ever given out, and so I try. But I'm not gonna name a nicest thing because that's in their individual judgment of what nice thing I've done for them. So I can't judge that one. 95. Let's see. I think we're getting down to the end of it. 95 is Ronster one more time. Ronster, onion rings versus French fries. Assuming each one is the absolute best of its kind that you have ever tasted, which one would you choose? If I have to make a choice, Burger King onion rings. Yeah, I know, they're not even real onions. I know. It's pressed onion paste in a circle shape, and then breaded and fried. I get that it's not even real onions. I mean, there's real onion in there, but it's not an actual onion ring. It's just pressed onion in the right shape. And I love Burger King onion rings. Oh my God, they're so good. And I don't eat them because, they give me heartburn, and then they give me really bad gas, and then the after effects are not pleasant from eating onion rings, but they taste so good. I wish I could eat onion rings. I love when one of my sons will order onion rings at Burger King, and then I can steal one. That's it. I just have one. See, nothing bad happens from just one onion ring. That's awesome. I would love to have a whole order of them, but I really can't. And I love fried potatoes of any sort. So, really, when it comes to French fries, I mean, whether it's French fries, waffle fries, steak fries, crinkle fries, go curly fries. Who doesn't love a good curly fry, right? Tater tots. I'll take any kind of fried potato, which are also really bad for me, and I shouldn't eat so much. But I love them. But yeah, Burger King onion ring is gonna be top. Let's try one more. 40. And 40 is our last one from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, using Pathfinder, what is the alignment of the following Simpsons characters? This is inspired by a conversation with her husband. All right. Apu. Apu is lawful neutral. Simply because, look, I don't think good versus evil matters to Apu. I think it's just about following the rules. Mo. Huh. I'm actually going to put Mo at neutral leaning to evil. Maybe just flat out neutral evil. I don't think Mo is a decent guy. Again, law, chaos, that part is not important to him. I mean, the rules are important to him as long as they serve his needs, but only so far. Does he live by some kind of particular code? No, not particularly. But he also has shown that he is willing to threaten harm upon people for the slightest infractions. So, yeah, I don't think he's a good guy. Neutral evil. Patty. Patty and Selma both. I'm going to go chaotic evil on them. Milhouse, lawful good. He just is. I mean, look, the rules, order, knowing your place. He knows what's right and wrong, and he really insists on doing what's right, even though he gets lured away quite often. That's not his fault. He tries. And good, because I think he sincerely wishes harm on no one. And then Groundskeeper Willie, who's probably the most interesting of all these characters. And Groundskeeper Willie, I'm going to go chaotic neutral. I think, yes, he works within the system and all that, but I know Groundskeeper Willie is a strong individualist. A rugged defender of liberty, if you would. And again, good versus evil is not as important to him as his freedom. That's where I'm going. So chaotic neutral on that one. And that's the end of your list. So I could have done all the Simpsons if you wanted to, but out of that list, yeah. I'm going to stand by those. I'm not as solid on Apu and Mo, I don't think, but Patty, Milhouse, and Willie, yeah, I'm pretty sure on them. But, whoa, what a great topic for the boards, right? So, that is the end of the Podomatic and the end of our podcast. So, all that's left is for GLaDOS to give us a quick summary of this episode. Go on, GLaDOS.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
be prepared. Here's where my lack of script is really going to bite me in the ass. This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's In the Garage and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy it, really spread the word. Let other people enjoy it. Honestly, make it your mission. Go out this week and just in conversation at some point, bring up something that you heard on this podcast and find an excuse to mention this podcast and how much you enjoy it. That's all I'm asking. Just once. Just once. You don't have to do it every week because I understand that that would make you kind of tiresome to constantly be harping on about what an awesome dude I am. I mean, I know you want to, but really, you don't want to be that guy, right? But do that. Recommend it to a friend. If you want to get in touch with me, let's see. What are all the ways you can get in touch with me? You can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Twitter, my Twitter handle is @nerdprideradio. You can even email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, which I'll even respond to you if you do that. But throw all those aside. The very best way to contact me is come over to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there. You send me a private message. We'll hang out together. Become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Can't believe I made it through that. Oh, darn it, there's no listener betrayal today. I forgot to go to the forums and let you guys know I was recording. I was so pent up about doing the script list that I completely forgot that right there at the beginning of the script it says, go to the forums, and I forgot to do that. So, unfortunately, no listener betrayal. The only thing that can substitute is R2-D2 with a 65, which I'm pretty sure we already did. That number sounds really familiar. No, we haven't. It's from Stan. 65 says, do you believe in ghosts? Nope. Nope, not even a little bit. And here's the thing. Whenever someone asks me if I believe in ghosts, I just say, no, I don't. I don't think bad of people who do, or at least I don't think really bad of people who do. But, you know, there's always that little twinge of, really? You believe in ghosts? Honestly? Okay, whatever. But I try not to judge. But whenever I'm asked this question, whenever it comes up, I think back to a conversation I had, almost 15 years ago with a gal at work. And we had had this very same conversation of, no, I don't believe in ghosts. Yeah, she does. I understand she does. That's fine. Oh, whatever. But I just don't believe in ghosts. I just don't. There's no evidence for it. Well, what about all these things? And I'm giving her the explanations of what all these things are, you know, how those reports come about, why people choose to believe them, how it gets perpetuated, that there's lots of myth and there's a lot of outright lying and fraud that goes on. And then a lot of people not understanding how coincidence works or how memory works. And it can seem very, very convincing when you're in the situation, but once you step back and you apply any sort of even semi-rigorous scientific study, you realize that, oh no, there's really nothing here. There's no evidence whatsoever. Nothing. All right. And so therefore I choose not to believe in ghosts. But later something came up with some movie that I loved. I wish I could remember what movie it was. I absolutely loved it. I loved the movie. I loved it. I mean, it was something X-Files-like. It wasn't X-Files because I hadn't been a big fan. I hadn't watched X-Files at that point. I only started doing that recently. Thank you, Kumail. But some movie came up and I talked about how much I loved that movie or how much I loved that TV series and how awesome it was. And she's like, really? I'm like, well, yeah. Yeah, I do. It's fun. It's science fiction. It's got humor in it. I was listing off all the reasons why I thought this was a great show. She's like, well, yeah, but you don't believe in ghosts. So I'm like, yeah, but Just because I know that ghosts aren't real doesn't mean I can't enjoy a good ghost story. I mean, and she was baffled. And this is not a dumb woman. She, you know, she's a person with a brain in her head, someone who I had, you know, regular conversation with, that, you know, enjoyable conversation, because, you know, she had a brain. And yet she was just baffled that I could enjoy a story like that. I'm like, but, you know, I don't believe in it. Maybe it was even Harry Potter. I'm sitting here about to give Harry Potter as an example. It might have been Harry Potter, because, yeah, I don't believe that, you know, I don't believe that witches and magic are real, but I certainly can enjoy a good story about witchcraft. I can certainly enjoy Harry Potter because it's an exciting adventure story. I felt like I was explaining to her that this is the whole point of speculative fiction, is things that aren't necessarily real, but, oh, what if they were? And how cool would that story be? That's the whole basis of fantasy and science fiction. That's, you know, we haven't yet traveled to space and met aliens, and even if we did, there's no way that they would be compatible with human biology. And yet, I love Star Trek, and I don't mind that Mr. Spock is half human somehow. That works for me. I'm fine with it. I'm willing to accept the premise of a show. I'm sitting here preaching to the choir. I'm not saying anything to any of you that you don't already know. You understand all of that. I get that. You're not idiots. And not saying that she was an idiot, but boy, on this one topic, she was kind of an idiot. She was just shocked that how could you possibly enjoy something when you don't even believe in that stuff? Well, it's fiction, of course. But now this is also the same person who, at one time, I described something that I had just watched as being an intelligent comedy. And she said, well, that's impossible. What? Yeah, to her, if something was a comedy, comedy automatically meant lowbrow. Comedy automatically meant that, yeah, it's easy. It's dumb and it's easy, and that's what comedy is. Like, then you are not expanding your horizons enough. And maybe she was just really naive when it came to certain media. I don't know. But it was a weird conversation, so I'll tell you that much. Time is it now? We're at an hour 20. Can we risk doing one more? Oh, R2 says we have to. And that is an 81. 81 is from... Oh, Mrs. Darks gets another one. All right. This is where we'll end it. If you could only have one protein source for the rest of your life, meaning the animal or plant in all preparations thereof. The animal or plant in all preparations thereof. I'm not totally heartless. What would it be? Only one source of protein. I am... All right, because my primary contenders here are... for me. I'm just saying primary contenders for me. Beef, pig, chicken, egg, or cheese. I suppose cheese is a protein source. And if that was all of my protein, okay, yeah, I can't go with cheese because that's so unhealthy. I can't even go with egg because egg, I think, are eggs still unhealthy? It's changed in the past. I don't remember. I think eggs are still pretty unhealthy. I think that would be a poor source for all of my protein. And in fact, you know what? If I've got to make a choice of only one for the rest of my life, I'm going to go with chicken, simply because I think it is the healthiest of the three animals on my list. I want... That was Aiden. I don't know where he's going. I don't know if you guys even heard him, but I did. And, I'm going to have to go with chicken, because the idea of eating only, I could do beef, because, you know, I like beef, but for financial reasons, because chicken is generally cheaper, for health reasons, because chicken is generally healthier, I'm going to have to go with chicken on this one. It wouldn't be the most pleasing to my palate. That would probably be pork. I mean, honestly, hot dogs, sausages, pork chops. Gotta love pork. But if it was the only protein source forever, yeah, I'm killing some chickens. There you go. I think that's it. Say goodnight, R2. Say goodnight, Aiden.
Good night.